Cortes wrote feverishly, trying to get down every word that was said from the podium at the police press office at Kungsholmen. Prosecutor Ekström had begun. He explained that it had been decided that the investigation into the police killing in Gossenberger, for which Ronald Niedermann was being sought, would be placed under the jurisdiction of a prosecutor in Göteborg. The rest of the investigation concerning Niedermann would be handled by Ekström himself. Niedermann was a suspect in the murders of Dag Svensson and Mia. No mention was made of Advocate Bjurman. Ekström also had to investigate and bring charges against Lisbeth Salander, who was under suspicion for a long list of crimes. He explained that he had decided to go public with the information in light of the events that had occurred in Göteborg that day, including the fact that Salander's father, Carl Axel Bodin, had been shot dead. Calling the press conference was that he wanted to deny the rumours already being circulated in the media. He had himself received a number of calls concerning these rumours.
"Based on current information, I'm able to tell you that Carl Axel Bodin's daughter, who is being held for the aggravated assault and attempted murder of her father, had nothing to do with events."
"Then who was the murderer?"
a reporter from Dagens Echo shouted.
"The man who at 1:15 today fired the fatal shots at Carl Axel Bodin before attempting to commit suicide has now been identified. He is a 78-year-old man who has been undergoing treatment for a terminal illness and the psychiatric problems associated with it."
"Does he have any connection to Lisbeth Salander?"
"No, the man is a tragic figure who evidently acted alone in accordance with his own paranoid delusions. The security police recently initiated an investigation of this man because he had written a number of confused letters to well-known politicians and the media. As recently as this morning, newspaper and government offices received letters in which he threatened to kill Carl Axel Bodin."
"Why didn't the police give Bodin protection?"
"The letters naming Bodin were sent only last night and thus arrived at the same time as the murder was being committed. There was no time to act."
"What's the killer's name?"
"We will not give out that information until his next of kin have been notified."
"What sort of background does he have?"
"As far as I understand, he previously worked as an accountant and tax lawyer. He has been retired for 15 years. The investigation is still underway, but as you can appreciate from the letters he sent, it is a tragedy that could have been prevented if there had been more support within society."
"Did he threaten anyone else?"
"I have been advised that he did, yes, but I do not have any details to pass on to you."
"What will this mean for the case against Salander?"
"For the moment, nothing. We have Carl Axel Bodin's own testimony from the officers who interviewed him, and we have extensive forensic evidence against her."
"What about the reports that Bodin tried to murder his daughter?"
"That is under investigation, but there are strong indications that he did indeed attempt to kill her. As far as we can determine at the moment, it was a case of deep antagonism in a tragically dysfunctional family."
Cortes scratched his ear. He noticed that the other reporters were taking notes as feverishly as he was. Gunnar Björk felt an almost unquenchable panic when he heard the news about the shooting at Sahlgrenska Hospital. He had terrible pain in his back. It took him an hour to make up his mind, then he picked up the phone and tried to call his old protector in Laholm. There was no answer. He listened to the news and heard a summary of what had been said at the press conference. Zalachenko had been shot by a 78-year-old tax specialist.
"Good Lord, 78 years old.
He tried again to call Gulberg, but again in vain. Finally, his uneasiness took the upper hand. He could not stay in the borrowed summer cabin in Smordalru. He felt vulnerable and exposed. He needed time and space to think. He packed clothes, painkillers, and toiletries. He did not want to use his own phone, so he limped to the phone booth at the grocer's to call Lansort and book himself a room in the old lighthouse. Lansort was the end of the world, and few people would look for him there. He booked the room for 2 weeks. He glanced at his watch. He would have to hurry to make the last ferry. He went back to the cabin as fast as his aching back would permit. He made straight for the kitchen and checked that the coffee machine was turned off. Then he went to the hall to get his bag. He happened to look into the living room and stopped short in surprise. At first he could not grasp what he was seeing. In some mysterious way the ceiling lamp had been taken down and placed on the coffee table. In its place hung a rope from a hook, right above a stool that was usually in the kitchen. Björk looked at the noose, failing to understand. Then he heard movement behind him and felt his knees buckle. Slowly he turned to look. Two men stood there. They were Eastern European by the look of them. He had no will to react, when calmly they took him in a firm grip under both arms, lifted him off the ground and carried him to the stool. When he tried to resist, pain shot like a knife through his back. He was almost paralyzed as he felt himself being lifted onto the stool.